It's a great treat to talk to both of you today about this exciting new series. Ken, I have to ask you first, why country music?
Well, it seems after being in this business of doing stories in American history for 40 years, it's like, what took us so long? I mean, this is just a great subject, firing on all cylinders, and really, I think, reveals ourselves to ourselves at a particular time now where we are beginning to feel like we're losing touch with some of the traditions. We're also losing touch with a kind of civility among each other, that there's something in the songs of country music that are elemental, you know, how men and women get along and negotiate the incredibly complicated rituals of courtship and love and all of those things of redemption. These are the great human themes that populate the best of country music. And I think we're hungry for it. We certainly were, and just felt that when the opportunity presented us, we dove into the deep end without looking, and are really happy that we had this opportunity these 8 years to really try to shape something that we can bring back to say, look, we love this music. We think it speaks to us about who we are.
Dayton Duncan, you are the writer of this series, as you have been for many of Ken's series, as well as a producer. And I guess it falls to you to answer the big question, what is country music?
Well, that's what our film is about. We spend 16 and a half hours pursuing that question, what is country music? And I would say if the pursuit of that question is more interesting necessarily than the answer. But the short answer that we found is that country music isn't and never was just one style of music. And I think that's part of its allure and part of its importance as well. It's never been just one thing. It grew from many roots. Appalachian ballads that came from the British Isles and blues that might have come over with the fretless gourds that black slaves brought that became the banjo, and it came from minstrel songs, and it came from hymns, and it came from work songs. And it never was one thing from the very, very start. And then as it intertwined and mixed with other forms, it sprouted its own branches, Western swing, bluegrass, rockabilly here in Memphis, the outlaw sound, the Bakersfield sound, and so on. And so I think what we are proud of is that we make that clear, and that is liberating, I think. Both in terms of an appreciation of the music and all that it can be. And it's liberating in the sense that if you think that country music is just one thing that you didn't like, watch our film and you'll find 8 forms of it, I guarantee, that you really will like.
You're known, both of you, for taking a long time, a lot of research. When did this project start?
Well, I was in Texas, and a friend of mine said to me one morning, have you ever thought about country music? And I guess we'd thought about it, emphasis on the head. And it had gotten on a list that I found a few years ago of stuff that we talked about in the 80s or 90s. But it hadn't fallen to the heart. But when he said it, it just exploded in me, like, of course, yes, yes. And I went back to New Hampshire, and I told Dayton, and it was the same thing, yes, yes. And we've just been sort of plowing towards that ever since. So, you know, eight and a half years. We didn't begin shooting really in earnest until 2012, and we were fortunate enough to get a lot of people who have now passed, particularly Merle Haggard and Ralph Stanley and Cowboy Jack Clement and other people that fill out the portrait in ways I can't imagine our series without them and their on-camera contribution. We can easily handle them as historical figures, but it's really great to have them verifying and ratifying and enthusiastically building up other people. I mean, as Merle Haggard is phenomenal on his own remarkable life, but he's also great on, you know, Bob Wills, and he's great on the Maddox Brothers and Rose, and he's great on what it means to be a kind of dispossessed person in America, an Okie or an Arkie or a Texan sort of struggling with discrimination, which he says is not too different than what they did to the blacks. And so all of a sudden you begin to realize, you know, we're not tribes, we're a family, and we just got kind of different members of them, and I think these people help get us together.
I know that you did over 100 interviews for this program. As you mentioned, some of those folks are no longer around. But who are some of the people that you talked to, and why did you pick out some of these interviews?
Well, early on, we were just trying to make sure as we started, because we knew it was going to be a long process to start with some of the oldest. So our first interview was with little Jimmy Dickens.
Wow.
You know, now passed. Our second interview was with the great session musician Harold Bradley, who with his brother were instrumental in the starting of Music Grow and recording in Nashville, now passed. Our third interview is with Roy Clark, who was a multi-instrumentalist of incredible talent, a good singer, a comedian, and who we wanted to hear about the history of country music from. And he's no longer here. And Gene Shepherd, no longer here. Cowboy Jack Clement, Ralph Stanley, Merle Haggard, a number of those people. And what we learned is that unlike many of our films where we rely principally on historians or writers of mm-hmm. history, whether they have PhDs in history or not, to help us tell the story, in this one we found a great number of people who are musicians who are also passionate about the history of country music, and their take on telling that history just has that little extra note, I guess, or flavor, because right. they come to it as musicians. So Marty Stewart is incredibly important to our telling of the history. Roseanne Cash mm-hmm. is incredibly important. Vince Gill, Ricky Skaggs, it goes on and on. And so the balance, really, of our interviewees are musicians or in the music business. We did interview Bill Malone, who 51 years ago in his college PhD thesis decided to take country music seriously enough to make it into his PhD thesis, and felt from that moment that the academia was sort of looking down its nose at that, because it was country music. You know, it's not important, it's not serious, there's nothing significant about it. And he became one of our consultants and one of our interviewees. And when he came to a screening that we put together, was very much emotionally wrapped up in what we've done. He said that we had validated what he had spent the last 50 years of his life doing. And that, I think that was one of the highest compliments we've yeah. ever received in any film we've ever made.
Yeah.
So many of your films are very much historical, the Civil War and the Dust Bowl and many of these things. And you do have to rely on historians for so much of that. Was there a sense of urgency here? Since country music is primarily a 20th century phenomenon, and you could still get some of those folks, but not for long.
It's hard to sort of know what urgency is more important. Yeah, there was a sense that we had people and the clock was ticking and we needed to get to them, and in a few cases couldn't, but in most cases did, and we're very sad that, if we'd had this interview, a couple months ago, 3 months ago, it would be 15 or 16 people. It's now 20. We hope that it doesn't grow anymore before the September broadcast, but we certainly don't control any of that. The urgency comes from us to tell the subject, and we've had many subjects like the Civil War where we weren't going to get a chance to interview Abraham Lincoln the way we got a chance to interview Merle Haggard, who's the kind of god of this project for us. And so it's just Lincoln said this, coincidentally, that I work with the tools we have, right? And so if there's a lot of pictures about a subject, then we have a lot of pictures. If we don't, in Lewis and Clark, a film that we made, we'll go out and see what Lewis and Clark saw and film that. Sometimes there's a lot of footage in World War II or baseball or Vietnam, and sometimes we're still dependent on the still photographs to help sort of ground the chaos of the footage. So we're working with what we have. I think the significant point is the one that Dayton made, that of all the interviews that we did, really only one person was what you would call a historian, an official historian. Mm-hmm. Others, you know, had written books. Others had, you know, weren't as much of a musician as, say, Marty Stewart is. But nonetheless, were part of a country music family. And Bill Malone would consider himself that, and I'm sure he plays music, and I'm sure he's got, you know, sings along when he's out from classes and research. But it's a distinguishing characteristic that it's Marty, it's Ketch Secor and Rhiannon Giddens, the two youngest people that we interviewed were the people who knew the most about the first section of the film, the oldest thing. And that gives you a great deal of encouragement. Do you know that country music is always trying to bust free and go in some new direction? But just as much as it busts free, it also says, are we losing our way? Did we just lose our soul? Do we need to go back and find out who the elders are and remember our manners to not get above our raisin? And yes. And there's going to be a new generation, and Marty's been one generation about that, and Ketch Secor and Rhiannon Giddens have been a part of a new vanguard of people who are curious about how this music came about and who made it, and to explode some of the myths about that, that liberate us. As Dayton says, it's all about liberating us from the tyranny of the simplistic answer, oh, country music's one thing. Well, then it's not. And, you know, it doesn't include this. So, well, if that's the case, how do you explain D. Ford Bailey, a black harmonica player, early on in the Grand Ole Opry, or, you know, somebody as great as Charlie Pride, or the fact when Ray Charles, an R&B singer, a soul singer, is given his first chance at having creative control of an album, makes one on country and Western music, modern sounds and country music, huge, huge hit and a seminal moment in country music, but I would just take the country off and say in music history, because all of a sudden we're reminded, as Wynton Marsalis, a jazz genius, says in our film, that the art shows the way of what is possible, tells the tale, he said, of us coming together. And we think country music does that.
And there are lots of examples of these cross currents, cross-pollination, whatever metaphor you want to use, that speak to country music and also just speak to American music as a whole. There is no greater example of it than here in Memphis in the 1950s. You know, I think it'll come as a huge surprise to many people who watch our film to see Johnny Cash and Elvis Presley as young men, as good buddies. And it'll become a great surprise to when they start thinking about the fact that their early concerts were to front for country stars, because they were viewed as much as country as anything else, because there was no rock and roll,
exactly,
per se.
Exactly, yes.
But so that while the blues and gospel are certainly part of the parentage of what became rock and roll, country music is just as much a part of that as and that could only – and that is an accident, not accident, a fortuitous coincidence of geography that all points to this river town on this mighty river, which has been a conduit up and down its current of different types of culture that bring their different types of music. And here it mixed and mingled, and we were at Bristol, the Big Bang, they call it. Well, this was just as big a bang right here in Memphis.
And this film is the DNA evidence of the patrimony of country music in the whole rock and roll argument. I mean, it's not even a question. But I think in the shuffle to talk about how rhythm and blues and gospel and other things formed it, country's often left out. But this is, you know, the hillbilly kid, right?
Yeah,
Elvis Presley.
The hillbilly cat, they called him.
Yeah.
Because he was a cat and a hillbilly.
Right.
Blue Moon of Kentucky on one side would be playing at first on the country stations. On the other side, That's All Right, Mama, would play on the rhythm and blues. And, you know, it just cross-wired everything and proved the point that Sam Phillips, a genius in American music, I think, not just a pioneer, a genius in American music, that's what he set out to do,
right,
was to say, you know, screw these color barriers.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We like that music, and you know they and like this music, and we like this music. And just as Ray Charles would later record country music, it went both ways.
Yeah.
Black people were listening to the Grand Ole Opry. Great artists, black artists, were listening to hillbilly music, just as the hillbillies were listening to the great rhythm and blues. Why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
They're musicians. They're artists.
And they all have the blues somewhere percolating down below, underneath it, animating it.
Obviously, we look very much at the threads that combine to become what we call country music. When I was growing up, there was a very much of a Berlin Wall between rock and roll and country music. You didn't hear them on the same stations. You liked one or the other. It seems in the past few years, especially since the 90s and people like Garth Brooks, that there has been very much of a blurring between those two worlds to the point that what we call country music is really the popular music today. Do you take from there and give some sort of idea of where this music is going?
No, and we're not prognosticators. We look behind us, that's the past, and try to understand a little bit about the present. But our film's mission is not to do that. We do stop with Garth because it did represent in some ways the non-hostile takeover of popular music by country music and to become the dominant form in America. I would suggest, though, that the barriers are still up and that one of the things our obligations are to remind people that those barriers are completely arbitrary. They're drawn mostly by commerce and certainly not by art, and the artists continually cross the borders without passports, and so do the fans. And that's an important thing. It's really the marketers who need to know I'm directing it to this sort of person, and that's why we end up with stations that are only country or stations that are only rock and never the twain shall meet. But, you know, we're all moving around on the dial, and we're stopping when we hear something that's good. And what's great about Garth is that he was able to bust out the way Dolly Parton had done, the way other people had done, Johnny Cash had done at times, bust out and remind us that these labels and these boxes are so completely arbitrary, and that even when we talk about the beginning country music, as Dayton is saying, it's not even one thing at the beginning. It's lots of things at the beginning, and we just happen to call it hillbilly music or hill country music or old-time music or country and western music or just country music. But by that time, it has morphed into so many different things. The label just doesn't even do it justice. Just as, you know, tell me within rock and roll, between what, when does it stop and when did folk happen and when is it not rock? And, you know, it's a fool's errand to make these kinds of delineations, because what happens is you spend a lot of time talking about it and not enough time listening or dancing to it.
Exactly.
Or crying to it.
Or crying to it, right, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's about two four-letter words, you know, love and pain,
yep.
Right? You know,
exactly.
And that's what country music addresses just completely, you know? You love that person, you miss that person, right? And that's it in a nutshell. And they're two four-letter words. We don't want to talk about it. So let's not talk about it. Let's just listen to it and cry in our beer or get up and dance for joy.
Something that many people may not remember is that for the Civil War and for some of your other films, you were also a musical director and had very much of a part in the music there. And this show is about music. So So what did you find? Did you run across anything that
well,
just,
I'm embarrassed
just knocked
about
you down?
The musical director credit, because what that meant is that I was certain I knew what I wanted, but I didn't know how to express it, and I got musicians who were tolerant of my incoherence and able to, after trial and error, figure out what I wanted and deliver it, and then it worked in the film, and somehow that earned that moniker, which I haven't taken in years and years and years. You know, there's lots of music. Some of it's good. Some of it's great. Some of it's mediocre. Some of it's terrible. And the thing about what we get to do in jazz or in this is to say, you know what, we can acknowledge that. And there are a few songs in this film that through illustration and necessity I'm not that big a fan of. But most of what we've done is we've cleared out the brush And we said, look at the range of this stuff. Look at the powerful human experience and emotions that it represents and the eloquence that it actually is presented in a very simple way. Three chords in the truth, Harlan Howard said. And that's all that matters. And there's no musical direction needed for that. It's just listening.
Ken Burns, Dayton Duncan, thank you so much for talking with me today. We're very much looking forward to the premiere of Country Music. And thanks for sitting down with me here at Sam Phillips Recording Service in Memphis. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.